corners of the globe to your ears. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I'm Hunter in Texas. Joining me in the wild outback of Australia is your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu.
Hello. That's friendly neighborhood redback Spider-Man, that is.
And in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado, from his dark void of his basement, we have John Gray. Say hello, John.
Hello, boss.
John, you are aware there's a thing called electricity, right? You can put lights on. Yeah.
I've heard about it. I think Thomas Edison discovered it.
It's Ben Franklin.
Allegedly. Thomas Edison did the light bulbs and everything. So,
what do you got? The original light bulbs he made back in.
Yeah, they got up there from the 19th century.
Might want to change them over to LEDs or something these days.
I don't want people to see the carving. Got a little biopsy on my face. I got a Band-Aid, so I look like Jake LaMotta or something. Right now.
You never got me down, Ray.
Yeah, exactly.
You never got me down.
Speaking of method actors, Stuart, this is the movie we're doing today is one. I think you brought it up on the first episode of the show.
Ooh, I was just about to say, can you cast your mind back to 2012?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Because I remember you're the one who first told me about this movie, and that movie is Straight Time, starring Dustin Hoffman, directed by Ulu Grosbard, and written in part and based on a book by Eddie Bunker, who viewers will probably know as Mr. Gray from Reservoir Dogs. Ooh. Mr. Blue. That's right.
We got to whip out our junk, my friend. Remember?
Oh, yeah. We got to whip out our junk. That's right. Yeah. Let's whip out our junk. Stuart or John, you want to go first? So you go first.
The only thing I purchased this week was I got like I have no visual for it, but the Amazon Christmas trial for Paramount Plus. It's like 99 cents for 2 months.
Oh.
And disappointingly, can't watch Yellowstone on the Amazon version, which I thought was odd. Because I think if you have it on cable or something, you can watch it on there. But they've got a lot of the Paramount movies. Looks like they got some Fox films in there as well. They probably licensed from Disney. It's got all the usual Star Trek stuff. I don't think I'm going to watch most of that. I'm original series only. But that's about it. It was just like, I thought it'd be a fun splurge for the Black Friday special. And also, I'm doing this on a new laptop that I purchased yesterday. So.
Apple? You don't like Apple, do you?
No, I could go for Apple because Best Buy, everything is just so overpriced and everything. It wasn't a great time to shop there, but they're more reliable than Target or Walmart.
Apple computers are very expensive. I probably wouldn't have one if I didn't get one through work,
Right.
I would. I won't use Windows anymore. I just can't.
Yeah.
I
understand.
I got to say real quick. I don't know about you boys over there in the US, but bloody hell, the Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals this year through Amazon were terrible.
Yeah. Oh, worse. I didn't buy anything.
I didn't get anything from Amazon. Nothing.
I couldn't. I just looked at things.
Except Paramount.
Yeah. I'm not looking for things, 50% off, but there was nothing. I thought nothing shifting in price. So I just didn't. There's nothing. I just thought. I'll say honestly, Amazon's Prime Day member deals they have for the 2 days, wherever it is, earlier in the year, way better. Way better than the Black Friday sales.
I bought more.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Stu, you want to whip out your junk?
Yep. I only got one. One and a bit. I've got, I bought an Amazon deal for 99 cents for 3 months, Audible. So it gets me three. Audio books for $1, and then it's $16.50 a month after that, which I will not be doing. But the other one I got, I moaned about it last week. I found it. Motorheart.
Oh, nice.
You're in the picture, Stuart. Oh, you got to remember this.
fantastic album.
Choose virtual background. None. There we go. Oh what an album. Holy hell. This thing is unbelievable.
So they have atoned for Easter is canceled.
Yes, they have, my friend. that was such a disappointment. It's not terrible. It's not as bad as I thought it first was when I heard that back in 2019. But it slowly gathered momentum. This one, though, the first time I heard it, I was like, holy shit. I bought the deluxe one. That's all I ever buy with the darkness. Out of the 12 songs, there's 9 studio, like 9 for the standard album, 3 bonus. I would say 8 out of the 9 tracks are outstanding.
Yeah.
And 1 is really good.
Yeah.
Well, the bonus tracks, 2 are great, and 1 is just okay.
Mm-hmm.
It, in terms of all the albums, I listened to all the albums by the Darkness after I bought this and went back from Permission to Land right to an including this one, everything in between. Man, this one's way up there. Like way up there is one of the best. Yeah. Unreal.
Yeah, I think it's up there with their first album and the third Hundreds album.
Hot Cakes for you, huh?
I like Hot Cakes. Hot Cakes is really good. I like a lot of songs on their fourth album, but that one's like half good, you know?
That drops off.
Yeah.
Around about the first 6 to 7 are great. The last 3 or 4 drop off quite a bit.
They front loaded it.
Yeah. Pinewood Smile for me. I like that a lot.
Yeah. I like that one quite a bit.
Yep.
So for me, is that it for you?
That's it for me this week.
All right. So for me, I got a few things. One, I'm watching The Great Escape in my film class right now. And this one features a cast member from that, Breakheart Pess with Charles Bronson.
Hey, we're on a train.
Hey.
It's in the snow.
Check it out. It's got a slip cover.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's a new picture.
And it's got
Archie Moore.
He went up to the producers and he went, hey, you're going to put Jill Ireland in this picture, right?
It's mandatory.
That's never happened before.
And here's one. This is a movie that probably unpleasant to watch, but I picked it up in the Criterion sale. Uncut Gems.
Never seen it.
It's like an Abel Ferrara film. It's very stressful. But I had to complete my Criterion Adam Sandler collection, you know? But the packaging's pretty awesome. You know, you got the little jewelry thing because Adam Sandler's an unscrupulous jewelry dealer. Oh, wow. There was some wacky stuff in there. Anyway, but and it's got a bunch of the shorts that the Safdie brothers made with Sandler afterwards and a lot of features. So, yeah, but the movie it reminds me of is Bad Lieutenant, really.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, really? It's a lot like Bad Lieutenant where you're watching a guy dig himself deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper until it, and he's such a loathsome person, but you're rooting for him anyway.
Does it equal the hammy Keitel acting of Bad Lieutenant?
Oh man. Sandler's.
You fuck.
There's no scene where Adam Sandler does heroin and dances around naked. So thankfully.
Oh good. That's a relief.
Last, but certainly not least, I picked up Criterion's Once Upon a Time in China.
Oh.
Which has not just 1 through 3, but it's got 4 and 5 as well. Which I did not realize when I bought it.
Never heard of it.
Did it have Garrow's footage? Did you fast forward to that? Did you skip to the part right away?
No, but I wanted to, if there is behind the scenes footage for Once Upon a Time in China and Once Upon a Time in China in America.
That's it.
That's so. Bed, yeah. So Garrow Nagosian involved.
Yep, he got paid.
He did by Criterion for it.
Yeah, they paid him.
Wow, I did not know that. That's very cool.
That was for the Once Upon a Time in Armenia.
Yeah, he fights Turks. Does a no shadow kick on the Turks.
He fights System of a Down.
Once Upon a Time in Florida now. What have we got? Once Upon a Time in America, China,
Hollywood,
Mexico.
Hollywood.
Yeah.
There's Once Upon a Time in, there's a Bollywood movie that's like Once Upon a Time in India. Yeah.
Hasten to think what that's about.
Yeah. Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah, in the West, yeah.
What was it? So, you know, it's a popular title. All right. But so let's go on to Straight Time, which I got on the Warner Archive Blu-ray that came out not too long ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, Stuart, this is one that came onto my radar because you mentioned it years ago. Gosh, almost 10 years ago now.
Yeah, 2012, when we did the ill-fated movie trading club with the one episode. Oh, we're going to do this every few weeks now. And one of those MMC brain farts we had. Oh, new segment, we're going to do this. Oh, new segment, we're going to do this. And anyway, and that was the episode where I got you to watch like Give My Regards to Broad Street.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we watched, what was that other one? Was it something else that was in that episode? You got me to watch something. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, I can't remember.
That was a long ass time ago.
Yeah. But so, you know, this came onto my radar because of you. What's your history with this movie? It's obviously very special to you.
Yeah. Okay. So I remember this from the VHS days. Remember seeing the Warner Brothers clamshell case and just seeing the picture of on the front of the box was Dustin Hoffman with the beanie on, and he's inside the when he goes to rob the poker place, the poker party, but that fails. Then he breaks into the other place later on that night.
Mm.
Anyway, there's a shot of him where he's crouched down. He's got his gun up and he's got a beanie on. That was a shot of the VHS cover. I thought, oh, it looks pretty cool. And
makes it look like an action movie.
It does, yeah. And rented it out in the very early 90s because I was on a real Dustin Hoffman kick at that time. And this is really at the pinnacle of his sort of rise as one of Hollywood's big sort of five actors, because he had, you know, it was just before Kramer versus Kramer, which exploded, you know, with him. Yeah, there's other films before that. He had Lenny, which I is one of my top three films of Hoffman, along with Midnight Cowboy. And I borrowed this one. I thought, okay, and I watched it. I was really impressed with it. I thought, this is a good movie that I've never heard of, and not one of the ones that gets spoken about in the circles of films of Dustin Hoffman.
No, and which is strange.
No. And so the DVD got released many years later. Here, I looked in the back of the box and it said 2007. I did pick it up when it came out because it was one of those $9.99 cheapies. So, I picked it up. And I think I've seen this, excluding today, probably about three times beforehand. The last time probably would have been about 2012 when we were going to do that episode, and it just never eventuated. And then when you said about Straight Time, I said, oh, yeah, sure, that'd be a good one to watch. So, but yeah, it's one of those ones like Al Pacino's got one called Scarecrow. He did back in 73 with Gene Hackman, or 74. Mm. It's one of those forgotten films that they have. It's not like with Pacino, it's Dog Day Afternoon, The Godfather, and Justice for All, or De Niro and his ones, and it's one of those sort of buried ones that they've got. And but one that's certainly just as good as the other films they made, and shot by Owen Roizman as well, which is a big plus for this film. Yeah.
Let's see, Owen Roizman. I need to see what else he's done. He did 3 Days of the Condor,
Exorcist, French Connection,
Adam's Family, solid.
Yeah,
another Dustin Hoffman movie, Tootsie. John, are you a big fan of Tootsie?
Not really.
I just wanted to ask an absurd question.
I'm surprised it hasn't made a big comeback, considering all the headlines these days, the trends.
It might be considered problematic today.
I think you're right, Hannah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it might be one of those things where
it's disingenuous,
or they don't consider it being taken seriously or something.
Right.
That's a great cinematographer. And the Blu-ray of this movie looks fantastic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've just got the DVD still, and I thought I played the DVD on the 4K TV and it looked just fine, but I figured you would have picked up the Blu-ray of it.
Yeah. So you're a big Dustin Hoffman fan, Stu.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I wouldn't say everything he's made is, you know, top shelf, but I do like him. I think he's overtaken De Niro over the last few years as one of my sort of higher placed actors, just because of De Niro's big mouth. That's all it is.
And honestly, like, if you had asked, I remember I was talking to a friend the other day, and he said, if you had asked me 10 years ago, Pacino or De Niro, I would have said De Niro. And he goes, today I'd say Pacino. And both Pacino and De Niro have done their share of bad movies lately, but I think De Niro's CV has been just chock full of garbage the last decade.
Oh, like he's in debt from his divorce, so he's literally taking anything you're saying.
Oh man, but he's really sullied his legacy with bad movies. Like Pacino's been in some stinkers, but you know Hoffman, he's done a few. Like he has a few of those turkeys in there. Like I can't stand Meet the Fockers.
Come on, who's gonna say it? Ishtar, man.
Oh, Ishtar, yeah. but for the most part, you know, like you know, he's kind of been a little more choosy about what he picks, and I think only having one ex-wife helps that. You know, he's been married to the same woman since 1980, so.
Wow.
Yeah. That helps.
But you know what was a movie recent that was not recent, it's over 10 years old, but a movie that he was great in was Barney's Version. Did any of you see that?
No.
It's based on a novel by Mordecai Richler, who did a book that was made into a movie called Richard Dreyfuss. It was The Apprenticeship of Duddy Kravitz. It's kind of a forgotten movie with.
Oh, I remember that one.
Yeah,
I've seen on
VHS. Yeah,
yeah. It's based on a novel by the same author, and it's actually like related to it somehow. But it stars Paul Giamatti, and Dustin Hoffman plays his dad, and he plays a former cop in it, and he's terrific in it. I mean, I thought he was amazing. Yeah. But that's kind of a movie that flew under the radar that if you like Paul Giamatti, it's worth checking out. It has a lot of director cameos in it too. Like Ted Kotcheff is in it and David Cronenberg and people like that.
Oh God.
Yeah. Lots of Canadian directors.
Adam McGoyan didn't pop up.
I think he is in it. I think he might be in it.
I memed it in a reality.
Let me see.
I'll tell you another film that he made that I do like was his performance as Mumbles in Dick Tracy.
Oh yeah, he's giving a typical Dustin Hoffman performance. Yeah.
Yes, it is. What about Madigan's Millions? Anybody seen that? His Italian film?
No, I've never seen that.
He didn't want his name on it, I think. He was so ashamed of it. It was the first one. Yeah, they probably tried to sleep with his girlfriend or something. The whole time.
Oh, yeah. He did a movie in Italy not too long ago, recently.
Really?
Yeah.
It wasn't like a Lamberto Bava movie, was it?
No, I was looking at it, and it was called Into the Labyrinth.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't discern like anything about it just from the Wikipedia article. So, because I was going, what's the last thing he was in? Because it seems like he doesn't work that often these days.
No, he doesn't have to.
Yeah.
No.
Never mind. I don't think Adam McGoyan's in it. I don't see his name on the IMDb.
Oh, darn it.
Yeah, I know.
I would say out of De Niro, Pacino, and Hoffman, Hoffman's legacy is the one that is the least sullied with crappy movies. I mean, De Niro's is the worst by a mile.
And the thing about Dustin Hoffman for me is I'm actually not a huge fan of his, but I respect his body of work. I'm just not a big fan of the sort of obsession with realism that he has. Does that make sense? You know, like I was listening to the commentary for this movie.
Right.
And it's a good commentary. Should listen to it. Hoffman talks a lot and he's pretty open.
That's very rare because these commentaries usually are very dry.
It's him and
Ulugh Grosbard.
And they're not together. They cut back and forth. And it's a pretty good commentary. I mean, I didn't listen to the whole thing, but it was pretty good. But I noticed that Hoffman has this obsessive approach to acting. Mm. Like, he's talking to the actress playing the role of his girlfriend, Teresa Russell. Mm. And he talks about talking to her and going, you know, he said, I looked at her and I had to make sure that she was someone I could be I was attracted to. And I was talking to her and I said, you know, I know we're actors and we want roles. Yes. Mm. But like, would you be attracted to me as somebody in this particular situation, being an ex-con who's asking her out? And he said, and she said she had that in her past. And he goes, I don't know if she was lying or not, but it was very important to him that that be real. Yeah. And I'm like, like
a
that,
21 year old woman trying to break it is not going to say, nah, I'm not.
Oh that. No. Like, and you know, when you're an actor, those roles, you want it, you know?
Oh yeah.
But he has this obsession with realism, and like, and he constantly is talking about like, oh, I went to a surgery and I took pictures and I videoed it and I noticed the way they talk, and you know, you spend time with ex-cons and maybe, you know, it just, and I'm not like, his work speaks for itself. He's made a lot of great movies. But you know, it gets, I don't know if I like the method acting approach just from
De Niro was no different. He was
I know.
He was driving cabs for Taxi Driver, and they go,
yep.
Some lady, he picked up some lady. She goes, you want an Oscar? Why are you driving a cab? So she couldn't work out why he was driving a cab. But, and, you know, it was obviously for that part.
And Hoffman said he spent a day inside for this movie.
Yeah.
And
he hung out with ex-cons for,
yeah,
what was it, 2 months or something?
Yeah. Which, doing research is cool, you know. You want your role to be, but he would take it to other levels where like, oh, my character's supposed to be tired, so I'm going to stay up for 12 hours tonight. You know, like, you know, I'm not going to sleep. I'm going to stay up all night.
That's someone who's an actor compared to somebody who just wants to be in films.
Right. The method, it's a, like Laurence Olivier was in the Marathon Man with him and was like, bro, it's acting. I don't think he said
a good movie as well. Marathon Man, I forgot all about that one.
Yeah. Written by William Goldman.
Mm.
But John, what are your thoughts on Dustin Hoffman? You don't seem like the kind of guy who it would be a Dustin Hoffman fan firing up Midnight Cowboy and, you know,
well,
The Graduate.
Well, when I started going to the movies regularly with my dad and, in the late 70s, Hoffman was probably the big star, mm-hmm. like Dustin Hoffman. That's what you would hear in the trailer for, like, I probably saw the Kramer versus Kramer trailer 100 times, yeah, in 1979. And I mean, that was the big release in or 1980. And but you saw the trailers forever back then. You would see a trailer for like a year before the movie was released. And Dustin Hoffman was just like the top star. I would actually say he was the top star at the time. Because, you know, adults went in and saw his movies.
Did any of you guys see the trailer for this one?
No.
I did not. It's on the Blu-ray. And yeah. But I didn't watch it.
It is unreal. If you don't know Dustin Hoffman's in this film before you watch the trailer, you're damn well going to know it afterwards, because all you hear it is Dustin Hoffman, straight time. a little bit of footage, Dustin Hoffman, straight time, about 8 or 9 times through the whole trailer.
I think it was like, we need to repeat the title this many times so people remember, something like that.
Well, you need to repeat the Dustin Hoffman's in it, which we know. I mean, there's no even mention of Teresa Russell, Gary Busey, Ari Dean Stanton, nobody. It's just Dustin Hoffman. Which is odd, but
they were nobodies then. Busey, I think Buddy Holly's Story opened in 78, maybe the same year.
Buddy Holly's story was just after this one.
Yeah. So they weren't draws yet, so you don't even mention the character actors. Harry Dean Stanton's not gonna be mentioned. But Teresa Russell, I think, was very,
you know who else was in it? Jake Busey.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't know that until I saw the credits again. Oh, there he is.
Yeah, that's his son playing his son in the movie.
And a thin Kathy Bates.
Yeah, that was wild. I had never seen Kathy Bates skinny before. Skinny for, you know, back
Kathy
then.
Bates, yeah.
You know, for Kathy Bates. But yeah, Busey, I'm looking at his, oh my gosh, he's done so many movies. Busey. Yeah. When he did this, okay. He'd been in a few things. Let me see here.
I think he was in Big Wednesday.
He was in Big Wednesday. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
When was this?
There was a villain in a Kojak, maybe one or two.
This movie came out in 78.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't see it on. Oh, there it is. Okay. This was just before Buddy Holly story in Big Wednesday.
Yeah.
But he had already done, I think he was in Thunderbolt and Lightfoot before this in 74. He had a few scenes in that.
Yeah. Buddy Holly's story, by the way, great film. Well worth your time.
You know what? I've never seen it. That's one I've...
It's a good watch. It really is.
He got an Oscar nom for it.
Yeah.
But you've also got Harry Dean Stanton in this movie and as one of his other, like, outlaw buddies. But you know who's great is M. Emmett Walsh.
Yeah.
As his parole officer. So one thing Dustin Hoffman said that I thought was really funny was he said, I had trouble in school and I had bad grades. And he goes, there were just some teachers who brought out the worst in me. Mm-hmm. And he goes, M. Emmett Walsh had exactly that quality.
This film. You know, when Hoffman's wailing into the parole officer in the car, you know, probably something punches are probably real. Some of them are connecting, I reckon. That's the only problem I've got with this film is the whole subplot with the parole officer just disappears after he's chained to the fence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, there would have been a warrant out for his arrest. I mean, he's not going to say chained to the fence forever. So, obviously, there's a warrant
out for him. He pantses him.
Yeah, he pantses him. But that thread just disappeared. I thought,
Well, something that surprised me about this movie was that I expected it to be something other than what it was. The first like 30, 40 minutes of the movie is what I thought the whole movie was going to be.
Right.
Oh, okay. I thought, it's called straight time. I know this isn't what straight time is, like when you do your time and you go out and you're not on parole, but I thought it was going to be about a guy trying to go straight. Right. And the first like act of the movie is him trying to get a job. I want a girlfriend. You know, he sees Jake Busey's family and he's like, boy, I'd kind of like, you know, you can kind of see him kind of going, oh man, this is something I kind of would like. But his parole officer is giving him a hard time. You know, like his parole officer is, what's great about Walsh's performance is he's a nice guy, but he's always messing with him. Always. Yeah,
he's pushing his buttons.
Flicking him, you know, but he's smiling the whole time. He's like, hey man, it's fine. You got nothing to worry about. But then, you know, when M. Emmett Walsh pushes him too far, he freaks out and basically, assaults his parole officer and chains him to a fence. And then you're going, that's when I went, oh, okay. I guess this is like a full-blown crime movie now.
everything changed. He's going to be on the run.
And then it becomes him. He just goes back to his old ways and, you know, he's trying to have this relationship with this girl and, you know, then the jobs get more and more dangerous and they get riskier and riskier until something goes wrong, you know.
Was anybody buying the story about the girl wanting to stick with him the whole time?
Not really.
No.
I got to tell you, though, you know, all these dudes in prison, they've all got like female admirers.
That's true. That is true.
Like, and one thing Hoffman said, maybe it was Ulu said in the commentary, they said that they noticed these ex-cons, they always had women like hanging around who were kind of, they seemed like, what are you doing here? You know,
can't work that out.
Yeah. It's one of those things I think as dudes, we cannot understand. But I think that's not as far-fetched as you think, because she seems like she has a good head on her shoulders.
Yeah.
But like that scene where he goes in and takes her from work to get in the car, like if I was her employer, I'd call the cops.
Exactly. Yeah. Because
he's like grabbing her and stuff. You know.
It felt like at times he was trying to get her to leave because she wasn't understanding. This is a life he's chosen. He can't break the cycle. He doesn't know how to do straight time.
Mm-hmm.
And hence why at the end, which I won't give it away, it was almost like she was too, I wouldn't say stupid. It's a bit of a tough word. She just wasn't comprehending this. When he goes, I'm going to get caught. He was basically saying, just go. I'm going to get caught. I'm not going to take you down with me. Just sort of wake up a bit.
But fun fact about this actress, Teresa Russell, plays the girlfriend.
Spider-Man 3, man.
She's also in Wild Things, which was a legendary movie among schoolboys.
Your age, right? When you were in like third grade?
Yeah.
You had to get some of that Nev Campbell, what was her name?
Denise Richards.
Yeah. And Matt Dillon.
That threesome action there.
That's the only thing people know about
them. Didn't they make sequels? Didn't they make like directed videos?
Yeah, make that one or two more. Yeah, I'm not too
sure.
And it
was directed by the guy who did Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Yeah. John McNaught.
Yep. But Teresa Russell, she played the voice of Daria Nicolodi's character in Tenebrae.
Yes.
For the English dub.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And married to crazy Nicholas Rogue as well for a number of years.
Wow.
Don't like that guy.
Wow.
He made one of the worst Elvis movies I've ever seen.
What Elvis movie did he do?
Live a Little, Love a Little. Weird. Just there's the one where Elvis is in multiple rooms in the house, and it's bizarre.
Yeah, he did that weird Mick Jagger movie Performance.
That was terrible as well.
And he did the David Bowie movie
Man It Fell to Earth.
Yeah.
Everybody likes Don't Look Now, the Donald Sutherland, Julie Christie horror film.
Yeah,
that is good.
That's probably his most well-regarded, and, you know, it's got that shock ending.
It's the one people still talk about.
Yeah. That and The Witches is probably his best-known stuff.
He did direct that. He was the original director for Flash Gordon, the De Laurentiis production.
Oh, wow.
Fire. Yeah. And replaced with another director who seemed wrong for it. So.
Yeah.
Let's get the guy who did Get Carter. Wasn't it that
yes.
guy?
Yeah. Mike Hodges. Yeah.
Are you guys familiar with Eddie Bunker's other stuff, the guy who wrote this? Because this movie is basically about him.
Yeah. Right?
Like he wrote.
I read one of his 80s crime novels, like whichever one came out in the late 80s. I checked it out from the library when I was in high school or in college, and I may have known. It was probably after I saw Reservoir Dogs, and then I went and checked it out because I realized, oh, that's the guy from Reservoir Dogs, the real ex-con. So, he wrote novels, and it was a pretty violent, like hard-edge crime novel that was really big at the time when you had writers like William Connitz and Marcel Montalcino and Eugene Izzy getting stuff published. And I think all of those guys are dead now. Or William Connitz was another one. It's like, all those guys were dead by the late 90s, or Bunker died in 2005, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, he also co-wrote Runaway Train, one of the best canon films.
Yeah, he did.
Never seen it. I know all of it, but I've never seen it.
Oh, we should do it on the show. It's fantastic.
It's getting a Kino Lorber, I think, Kino Lorber release. I guess everything is now.
Yeah, I think I have the Twilight Time release.
That's probably just fine.
Yeah.
It's going to be the same transfer.
Yeah, I didn't feel the need to get the Kino Lorber one because I...
Is it the one Wesley Snipes? Or is it an earlier one?
You're thinking of Money Train.
Yeah. Runaway Train has John Voight and Eric Roberts. And Eddie Bunker is in it, too. But it's
Danny Trejo's film debut.
That's right. It's directed by Andrei Konchalovsky, who put Eddie Bunker in another movie, Tango and Cash.
Playing a police chief or lieutenant.
I think, Bunker, you would be good as police chief. You'd be in the role of your oppressor. I had to do this in Soviet Union.
You know who actually finished Tango and Cash?
It was... who was it?
Albert Magnoli, the director of Purple Rain.
Oh, wow.
And the Jeff Speakman movie, Street Night.
It wasn't Cosmatos. Didn't get...
No. It was... I thought it was going to be Peter McDonald, the second unit director. But it turned out it was... they brought in Albert Magnoli to kind of doctor it or whatever they...
I've actually got a confession. I still never seen Cobra yet. I've not seen it.
You're not missing much, man. No.
Everyone just seems to go on about Cobra. It doesn't interest me at all.
It's not that good. I thought it was bad when I was a kid.
Yeah.
What did
my dad and somebody? My dad ran into an old friend, and the guy said he thinks too much of himself.
Yeah,
so that gives you a general impression of the movie.
I was going to prompt you to tell that story. But yeah, Konchalovsky is an interesting guy. He was Andrei Tarkovsky's screenwriter in the Soviet Union. So it's kind of a strange path from Tarkovsky to Tango Cash.
Yeah. Mm. Well, there was this idea in the late 80s. Oh, let's get these artsy directors to make action movies. You know, maybe the critics will give a rave reviews just because of the name on there.
Well, Runaway Train is awesome. Tango and Cash.
It's terrific.
I don't know what happened there, but.
Kurt Russell claims they made a movie for 12-year-old boys. And it was a PG-13, which I thought was unique at the time. It wasn't an R.
Yeah, I remember it. I wasn't allowed to see it, but there were other kids my age who'd seen it and loved it.
your dad was protecting your brain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, when I finally saw it, I saw Runaway Train and I went, oh, he did Tango and Cash. I'm going to watch that terrible film. Thought it was awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely not the same directorial style. You know?
No, not at all.
It was a very troubled production. Very, very troubled production.
Yeah, it was. But yeah, and Bunker was also in The Long Riders, which is a very overrated Western.
Massively overrated.
Walter Hill. I remember I was so excited to see it. And boy, like, you know, the other Jesse James movies I've seen are better. Like I Shot Jesse James or The Assassination.
Long Riders was done strictly on the back of the brothers, the Carradine brothers and the... all the other brothers in the film? I
forgot. The Quaid brothers, the Keach brothers, the Guest brothers.
Yeah, I think we're moving on from Walter Hill. I think that's the problem is some of us are starting to wake up and realize we've been buying into the hype on Walter Hill for too long.
Well, I even said in an interview, you know, if I died, let's see. He said if I had died in, let me look at his filmography here.
Probably 82 or 83 after 48 hours.
Yeah, like before Streets of Fire, probably.
Yes.
He goes, I would be considered a genius and one of the all-time greats. He goes, but that's not the case. I actually watched
Brewster's Millions.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I watched 48 Hours again the other day. And that one holds up. That's a fun movie.
What about the sequel? What about another 48 hours?
I haven't seen it in a long time. I did enjoy his Geronimo movie though. The one John Milius wrote.
Yeah, it was based on Horace Carter's book, Asa Carter, the great Klansman, posing as the Indian.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one that was really, really good. You gotta watch it. It was excellent. It was Bullet to the Head.
I didn't like it, but maybe everybody else seemed to love it. I need to watch it again.
It was terrible.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, there were people defending that movie when it came out. And I remember watching it and going, this sucks.
I rewatched it recently because I got the DVD at Big Lots for like 88 cents. And it was so bad. Just like, why? People want this to be more than it is. And it's like Jason Momoa should have been the good guy and Stallone should have been the villain.
Yeah. But actually, yes. Oh, Southern Comfort was 81. I was going to say, I like that.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was a good film.
Yeah.
But, in Hard Times, you know, can't.
Hard Times
that.
Is great.
Yeah.
Done. Warriors is a lot of fun. The Driver Warriors, is great.
Warriors is the one he'll be remembered for in the end. It'll be the Warriors. But just get that original theatrical version out on high def, for God's sake.
Oh, man.
It's on streaming. It's all over streaming.
Go ahead.
Which usually tells you, okay, there's a version coming in high def, but not yet.
One he did that's terrible, Red Heat, awful.
Oh, it's so boring.
You know, just bad. bad. And Last Man Standing, that's one that I thought I would like, and I did not care for.
No.
That's terrible.
Could have been better. Should have been better.
Should have been better. But yeah, I don't know. Got on a Walter Hill tangent because of Eddie Bunker being in it. But
I don't think we've done a tangent since we've gone to video, have we yet? Mm-hmm. So it's been pretty...
I don't know.
Pretty, yeah. Pretty restrained.
But so for Straight Time, John, had you seen this before?
Never seen it before. Knew about it, but never, it's, you know, never seen it.
What do you, did I ask you what you think of Dustin Hoffman? You said he was the adult actor.
Yeah, he was the grown up star. You know, he was big in the '70s. If you put him in a movie, people lined up to see it, I think.
Are you a fan of his?
He's okay. Hoffman? He's okay. I'm not like a worshiper or anything. I don't seek out his movies to see everything. It's like I like Marathon Man and I like this and you know, pretty much everything I've seen him in. I don't think he's bad. Like was the one Wag the Dog, which gave us an eternal.
Oh, that was good. Reference.
That's a really good.
Playing very, Robert very Evans. Good.
Yeah, that's a really good movie.
Yeah, and Hook I thought was pretty bad, but I hate Robin Williams.
He's good in it, though, I think.
He is decent. He's decent, but the problem is you get Rob Williams like, I'm flying. Ooh, me and the Lost Boys.
Hey, I'm Peter Panning. Ooh.
Ooh, oh, my gosh. Ooh, I can fly.
But, like, a movie of his that I think is okay, guy, like, this is too much acting, is like Rain Man.
Yeah, I don't like that performance. I think it's I don't even like the movie. I think it's pretty bad.
I do like the film. I think it's... It's perfectly fine. It's not one I revisit very often, but I mean, I own it. It's on the shelf. And that's a lot of that because of Tom Cruise. I can't stand him. Tom Cruise is the problem. It's not Dustin Hoffman. It's
I thought Hoffman overdid it. There was something hammy about it. And maybe because he was the first to do an extreme performance like that, but it didn't work for me back when I saw it. God, I was in high school when I saw that damn thing.
What do you think of Straw Dogs? You like Straw Dogs?
I never liked it that much.
It's very overrated. For what supposedly graphic violent film it is, which I'm sure it was back in the day.
You don't like the movie about where Peckinpah's like talking about how the urbanite cuck must meet the ruralite and be confronted by him to discover his masculinity and also women are evil. That is one of the most misogynist movies ever made.
sounds very MGTOW.
Yeah, it is a MGTOW movie. Mm.
Go on.
I was just going to say one movie that he's great in that I like a lot is Papillon with Steve McQueen.
Mm, it's okay.
I like that one quite a bit.
Well done. But I was going to say, John, remember, because you won't, Hannah, Tootsie was absolutely massive when it came out.
Yes,
you can't fathom just what an absolute smash it was everywhere.
I was aware it was big because my mother was a big fan of it, and if she's a big fan of something, then it must be huge, you know, to reach her, you know.
But it was a massive hit, huge hit. I think probably John would be his biggest of all time.
It might be the biggest, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, because it was like monster hit that year.
It cost $21 million. It made $177.2 million.
Yeah, and this is 1982 money we're talking about, I think.
Yeah.
Or 83 money. This like
yeah. And crazy. Kramer versus Kramer cost $8 million and made $173 million.
Yeah. He was a star, man. He was a big star. He was the man.
Some others.
That's another MGTOW film is Kramer versus Kramer.
Oh yeah.
Holy shit. He might be the most red pilled actor out there, Dustin Hoffman.
Is it good? Is it a good movie? I've never seen it.
It is a good. It is well done, yeah.
Okay.
It's a very good film.
It's basically a movie about how evil family court is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to be something pretty compelling there.
Coach Greg Adams talks about, you know, on a daily basis.
But yeah, Wag the Dog is the one that's like super underrated. That one needs to be rediscovered.
I agree. Very, very, very good film.
I thought it fell apart when Woody Harrelson showed up. Then it kind of lost me.
And he's also a recent one he did is that Noah Baumbach one with Adam Sandler. the Meyerowitz stories.
Oh, I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, I think it's on Netflix or something.
It has Adam Sandler, so of course you know all about it.
That's right. That's right.
You're the big Adam Sandler mark.
It means it's automatically Kino. He's done a few movies with Sandler. He also did The Cobbler, too, which looked terrible, I got to say.
Harlan Ellison was a fan.
Oh, he was? Okay.
Yeah.
Before so when Criterion releases that, what's that shitty movie, Happy Gilmore on Blu-ray, it's going...
We need
Price is wrong, Bob.
We need a Criterion box set that's done like the Zatoichi box set of all the Happy Madison movies. All of them.
Including Grandma's Boy?
Yes, Grandma's Boy will have a seat of honor.
And Grown Ups 2.
Grown Ups 2 especially. Grown Ups 2 is great.
That movie where they're going to look for Bigfoot, it's got like
Steve. Oh, yeah. Steve Strange Wilderness.
Yeah. The Fred Wolf movies.
Yeah. And you'll have some of the bonus features will be the Rob Schneider ones.
It'll have the Jewish cartoon and the Hotel Transylvania cartoon.
Right.
And the Knights of Hanukkah or whatever the hell it's called.
Eight Crazy Nights. Yeah.
Knights of Hanukkah.
No, trust me. Hey, Criterion, if you're listening, I will buy it. It won't erode your brand at all.
Yet they'll release that yet in the Blu-ray.com forums with somebody going, yet, oh, such and such hasn't gotten the release. I'm just, oh, that forum just makes me want to smash your head on the table.
Yeah. This was my first time watching this. And even though I'm, you know, this movie seems like a very Dustin Hoffman film to me. It seems like it's the essence of Dustin Hoffman, which is why I can't believe it's not more well known.
It's because it's buried amongst all the other ones like Marathon Man, Kramer versus Kramer. It's just one of those ones it's in there and it's really, really good, but it's just not one that.
And I don't think it was a huge hit. It only made like 10 million at the box office, which, you know, I don't know. I can't find the number of what it cost.
Wouldn't be much.
Yeah, that's really mediocre. That's a mediocre take for 19.
Oh, on IMDb it says 4 million estimated. So, you know, not a flop or anything. It did, you know, respectable business, but this to me, like, it's like a pure Dustin Hoffman vehicle. It's a very actor piece.
Yeah.
And I think he was supposed to direct it, but I think it turned out he was kind of inept as a director.
Right.
And I think Ulu Grossbard was a guy he had a history with in theater. And on the commentary, Hoffman never says I was supposed to direct this or anything like that.
There was an ugly lawsuit over it. They were suing each other and probably gave it some bad publicity. But if you think about it, if it grossed 10 million, think about that same year, the Chuck Norris movie, Good Guys Wear Black, grossed like 20.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So
puts it in perspective.
And that's a half ass Chuck Norris film, really.
Yeah, it was his first, but it was a big hit, you know.
When was A Force of One? Was that 79?
Yeah, that's 79.
Yeah, that's much better.
That's better than Good
Guys.
That
was also a big hit that made something like 19 or 20 million. But then by the time Chuck made Forced Vengeance, that only grossed like 4 million that bombed at MGM. So we were trying to figure out what hurt Chuck at the time. Like maybe he was overexposed.
Well, Chuck was working for Canon.
Mm.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, okay, like he didn't work for Canon until 84. They made Missing in Action. Mm-hmm. And so, but Force Vengeance was 82. And Eye for an Eye did okay. Silent Rage did all right, like 18 million, not as good. But then Force Vengeance, 5 million.
Was that the one we did a commentary for, Force Vengeance, with his hat, Chuck Norris?
Yeah,
hat?
Yeah, we did that
yeah,
one.
Yeah,
many
years. It's got the voiceover. He touched my hat.
Yeah.
It's really silly. Yeah. But I think that, but on the commentary, Hoffman talks about putting this movie together and that Ulu was brought in later.
Yeah.
So he talks about like he found the actors, you know, so, you know, it kind of confirms that this was his ship. And then later, according to Wikipedia, Grossbard was brought in because the investors were going, oh my gosh, like we had had a day of shooting with Hoffman and we got nothing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. They were real crazy about that stuff back then.
I think he's too pedantic to be a director.
Yeah.
As far as an actor goes, like he has this actorly, he's that obsession. You can bring that to acting, but with directing, like,
Frank. Yeah, he's too entrenched in what he's doing.
Yes,
to separate himself and become a director. Yeah.
I don't see him being a guy who could separate himself, his performance, and all that. He seems too manic, obsessive about what he's doing.
Hey, should let Burt Reynolds come in and direct it.
Yeah.
Did you guys?
If he was just a director and nothing to do with the acting at all,
so
he could probably pull off.
So Eric shared a very good story with me recently about Bert. You guys know he was in the video game Grand Theft Auto Vice City?
No,
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Why would we know that, Hunter?
I don't know. That is a star-studded game. It's got Dennis Hopper and Ray Liotta and Chris Penn. No, wait. I think he was in San Andreas. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So Bert was doing the voiceovers for it. And the studio was quite hot and Bert was getting pissed. He just didn't like doing it. And he was sweating through his shirt. And Bert's assistant went, he didn't tell Bert. He goes, I'm going to go get Bert another shirt. I'll be back. And he leaves and gets Bert another shirt and hands it to Dan Houser, the head of Rockstar Games. And Houser walks into the studio and goes, Bert, I got you a shirt. And Bert thought he just went and got him a shirt. Was like, you're a sweaty mess. You pig, you know, and it said, Bert goes, there's going to be two hits, me hitting you and you hitting the ground.
Yeah. I believe it. Yeah.
Yeah. We need a bully like that back in the business.
Oh, I was like, that is a classic Burt Reynolds story. But yeah. Did Burt and Dustin ever do a movie together? Can you imagine them together?
Oh, God. Like, yeah, I should have done a Cannonball Run. Could have been Arabs.
Aha! Dustin, we're not doing another take. I think the only movie that would be like something Dustin Hoffman would do that Bert was in was like Deliverance or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Or actually they were in a movie together. Oh no, wait, no. No. Hold on. No, I'm thinking of Eddie Bunker. He was in Adam Sandler's Longest Yard.
Okay.
Bert Reynolds. So sorry, I just got those crossed.
Actually, if Hoffman had done comedy, he could have done The Longest Yard.
Yeah, he's in a bunch of, he's done a few things, you know, he did Meet the Fockers, which I'm not a fan of. Right. But you know, he's done the Kung Fu Panda movies and a few animated things here and there.
He produced Tarzan and the Lost City, that Casper Van Dien Tarzan movie.
Really?
Yeah. I've never found out the story behind that, but he's one of the producers.
Was he like involved at some point? He was like, all right, just send me a check.
I don't know if maybe he was developing it for a friend or something. I'm not sure. Or did it as a favor for a producer. It's a mysterious thing.
Speaking of Tarzan, remember Joe Lara, that Tarzan who died recently?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, did you guys know he was married to a cult leader?
Mm. Yeah, I found that out when he died. And then they had all these reports about it. She was more famous than he was.
I didn't know much about her. And then I watched this documentary about her. And oh my gosh, like, what the heck?
Yeah, there's some sort of diet cult thing or something.
It was like a Christian diet, like based around, it was like a program they would bring to churches. It was called the Way Down Diet. And they got involved with evangelical churches, but then they put out a newsletter denying the Trinity. And so every church dropped them. And so she started her own church. And it was more like a cult, but Joe Lara like had kids and stuff like that. And she was married and she divorced her husband and married him. And they kind of had this, like, you know, they would do videos together and everybody was like, oh yeah, Joe was acting. It was just playing a part, you know?
Jeez.
Yeah. But yeah, the documentary miniseries I watched on it did not paint Joe Lara in a flattering light at all.
Poor Joe.
Poor Joe.
I watched one on YouTube. It ran about half an hour, 45 minutes about them, and it was just, that was enough. Strange people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of actors who were formerly models and you know, got through nasty divorces and did bad movies, I was reading an interview with Billy Zane today. And Billy Zane said, if you saw my career take a nosedive in the 90s, it's because I was getting divorced and I just wanted to pay all my alimony like that year.
Nero.
Yeah. Nero. And he said, I took anything and everything I could get my hands on.
And that's what's happened to Cage as well.
Yeah, that's true. It's like
he's got five divorces under his belt or something like that. He's got some insane amount of time he's been married.
It's a lot of alimony. Yeah.
Well, speaking of disasters, I think we'll take a break here and check in across the pond with the Nez. What do you say?
I say it's a good idea.
All right.
And now it's time for Rue Britannia with your foreign correspondent, the Nez.
This is your weekly briefing, and you are most welcome to it. In a move that will surprise nobody other than poker players who use tarot cards, the Prime Minister's lack of support amongst Tory backbenchers over the last year has now finally led to 12 MPs filing letters calling for Shirley's resignation to the party's parliamentary governing body, the 1922 Committee, and its chairman, Sir Graham Brady. In short, serious. Effectively, the 1922 committee requires 54 letters from MPs demanding Shirley to step down to force a leadership challenge. All the more secretive given how Brady never briefs to the media, let alone the Prime Minister, as to just how many letters are received. 12 letters so far is no surprise, not least given how Doris has never really all that much been remotely interested in the idea of actually cultivating any friends in the backbenchers. He's never talked to them, never drank with them, never shook their hands. Upon publication of the story, Downing Street refuted it, the problem being that the story was published by both The Sun and The Daily Telegraph in the same morning. Given how 2022 promises to be even worse for the country's least popular court jester, it's now a question of when 52 letters are finally sent. Not if. Meanwhile, the government has tantalised the English public this week with the promise of a second Christmas lockdown by bringing back the mandatory policy of face mask wearing in public. The policy won't, however, be extended to hospitality, just general retail. Odd. This as the government also, in response to the outbreak of the Omicron variant, implements a travel ban on six African countries. Six. By Sophia. Either way, all rather inconvenient given how the Tories face three Christmas midterm by-elections caused by one MP resigning in disgrace over corruption, one MP dying of cancer, and one being murdered by a Muslim. Omicron indicates bad electoral timing indeed. Also indicating the idea of bad electoral timing is the suspicion that the government is now going to push for a third jab policy after Christmas, which is to say just in time for English and Welsh council elections in early May next year, which means the possibility of a Tory bloodbath. Hardly a wonder that so many Tory MPs now no longer sit behind Shirley at Prime Minister's questions, as the smell of failure has accumulated. So now possibly also the idea of electoral losses. Sport. And having sacked four managers in 8 years, Manchester United have decided to bring in the German Bockwurst this week by appointing interim manager Ralf Rangnick until the end of the season. Rangnick, one of the Bundesliga's most respected managers, will be expected to utilise his managerial skills in motivating a multinational squad of millionaire knee-benders, BLM activists, freeloaders, shift shirkers and tax-avoiding fashion models, back into the results business over Christmas. "Sehr glücklich to be here," said the chirpy Ralph to the Manchester Evening News. He had never clearly interviewed a German before. "I've heard so much about Manchester and Manchester United, I had to come. Bobby Charlton, Oasis, Freddie and the Dreamers, Coronation Strasse, the Living Dead at the Manchester Morgue, terrorist bombings, the Happy Mondays on heroin,
Orange Buses, Bellevue Circus, Piccadilly Radio, Fred Talbot, Stuart Hall, he rambled incessantly. Anyway, Ralph becomes the third German manager in the Premier League, though fourth if you actually include an Austrian. The message in the pasta, if you're a fan of a Premier League club, ask your chairman to get you a German manager for Christmas. Otherwise, like the Saudi Arabian royal family in charge of Newcastle United, your club's going down. Media. And woke CRGT suicide junkies ITV ran into difficulty this week when this year's I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here was interrupted by one of the contestants leaving the show after contracting Kung Flim. Also causing difficulty was Storm Aaron, which meant that the live show was effectively off for two consecutive nights. A shame, given the number of people who've appeared on ITV shows over the last 5 years who subsequently ended up committing suicide, resulting consequently in one programme being formally cancelled and consequently multiple lawsuits. ITV, the compassionate Be Kind channel. Anyway, with this season's location being a castle, the remaining contestants, comprising as usual the annual bunch of ex-panto dames, ex-toy MPs, ex-singers now clogging up OnlyFans, ex-children's TV presenters with murky pasts, will be so cold, depressed and suicidal, they'll positively be throwing themselves off the battlements in order to win the annual cash prize of £100,000, providing, of course, they can survive in order to actually collect. False values. And finally, and it's not really all that much in relation to anything particular, Ridley Scott's House of Gucci is a piece of shit. Kind of like Boris Johnson, who, funnily enough, is a completely useless piece of...
And we're back. Straight Time, starring Dustin Hoffman. Yeah. And Harry Dean Stanton. What'd you guys think of Harry Dean in this movie?
And Eddie Bunker's hair dye as well.
Yeah, Eddie Bunker's hair is embarrassing in this movie. Just want to say.
He's wearing a wig.
Yeah, oh, it's awful. I was why would you show up dressed like that?
Because he's naturally a ginger, but it's dyed black. It's like Elvis black, and it doesn't suit him at all.
Yeah. No, it's a very bad look. Harry Dean Stanton, he, no matter what movie you're in, he's in, he looks like he's the same age, which is like 65.
Yeah, he's one of those guys. When he was 25, he looked 65. When he was 65, he still looked 65.
Call it Alice Cooper genetics.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, big time. One story about him that I think is really funny was Monty Hellman said in Tulane Blacktop he was constantly complaining about having to play a, and Monty Hellman goes, homosexual.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah. Oh, you haven't seen Tulane Blacktop?
No.
Oh, I think you would probably like it, Stuart.
Has it got Sid Haig in it?
No. You think that because Alice Cooper did a song about it? Not Alice Cooper, Rob Zombie. How dare I? And what an insult to poor Alice.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No, it's got Dennis Wilson from the Beach Boys and...
Oh, God.
Yeah, and Warren Oates and who's that singer?
James Taylor.
James Taylor, yeah.
Like the worst singer of all
time. Yeah, and it's... You know, but Harry Dean Stanton's in it for a minute, but it's like a road movie. It's kind of like Easy Rider, but without all the hippie stuff. It's more like kind of existential road movie type stuff, you know.
No scenes of swimming in there at all?
No acid trips. No. I think you'd like it because you like sort of, it's not, I don't want to compare it to a kitchen sink drama because it's not, but it's kind of. It's kind of a thoughtful movie. There's some movies like it that you've enjoyed that right. I think you might enjoy it.
What year is this one? 70 something?
This was, let me see here, Tulane Blacktop.
It's like 76, 77.
71.
Like
71. 71.
Yeah, right. Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. And it's also written by Rudy Wurlitzer, who wrote Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, and he wrote Walker for Alex Cox. Very small filmography. But
Texas Ranger there for a second.
Yeah, no. Oh, he wrote a movie for, Oh no, he didn't write it. Never mind. He was in a Robert Downey Sr. movie. But
oh, speaking of Robert Downey Sr., when I mentioned the Gong Show movie the other week that I picked it up,
mm-hmm.
it was one of the writers.
Really?
Sr. and Chuck Barris wrote that film.
Wow.
Strange movie.
Chuck Barris, was he assassinating people for the CIA while he made it?
No, he just walked around with his silly hat on and people bugging him throughout the whole movie and Gong Show excerpts inserted in there and just...
You know who was in Confessions of a Dangerous Mind on the Gong Show? Dustin Hoffman.
Was he really?
Yeah. He had a cameo as one of the Gong Show Gong is people.
The Dancing Machine.
Yeah. I don't even think he's credited, but he's in the movie for like two. There's a lot of cameos in that film.
I've not seen that one for many years. Being good.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I just want to know what the fascination is that Robert Downey Sr. Has with Arabs. He's obsessed with Arabs. He's always got them in his movies.
It's kind of like Frank Zappa doing Shake Your Booty.
Oh, that was a good album. I actually heard that one on your recommendation.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that one quite a bit.
Yeah, that's a good record.
Yeah.
Arabs were in the media a lot in the 70s, I think, because of the oil crisis.
Yeah.
And so I think you got a lot of Arab imagery, Saudi Arabia. That's what you got around the time, like the Clash doing Rock the Casbah music video, where they got the Hasidic Jew and the Arab dancing together. Whatever it's like.
And then up the Academy, where they got the Arab bowing to the can of castor oil.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was the energy crisis. I think it put Arabs in the media a lot because it's like, hey, let's blame them for your problems. And everything.
Yeah. Let's talk about OPEC and all that.
I think I enjoy Robert Downey Sr. more than I do his son. I enjoy his stuff's way, way more off kilter than what.
Well, yeah, he's definitely more of an artist. He definitely screwed up his kid, though, I will say.
Yeah.
What was the series that he had? Was it the late night Robert Downey Sr. stuff or Up Late? There was some series of films or short films or something he made.
Criterion put out a box set called Up All Night with Robert Downey Sr.
Up All Night. That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah, but they put out a set with like Putney Swope, which I think got another release fairly recently.
Finding a Syndrome did a Blu-ray and I missed it and now it's gone.
Oh, yes. I missed it too. But I've got the Criterion one, but I wish I'd gotten that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well.
That was a good film.
Yeah. Yeah. That's his best movie, I think, that I've seen. I haven't seen everything.
I do like Up the Academy. It's not as good as Putney Swope, but it is still a fun watch. As maligned as it is and as much mess as it is, it's still a fun watch.
Yeah, and I saw y'all's favorite, speaking of movies like that, saw that National Lampoon's at the Movie
Madness.
Movie Madness got a Blu-ray release recently.
Yeah.
John was first in line. Yeah. Yeah. But Harry Dean's great in this movie, and there's a few like bank robbery, jewelry store robbery scenes. I read that Michael Mann was a writer on this movie, uncredited.
Yeah, his credit got removed. That's what happened.
Were they like, sorry, Mike, you haven't?
Yeah, he was the first screenwriter. I think he was working with Eddie Bunker and Dustin Hoffman, and somehow through Writers Guild arbitration, because other respectable screenwriters worked on this, like Alvin Sargent, who were already bigger names than Michael Mann was at the time.
Oh, yeah.
At this time, Michael Mann had written like the Vegas pilot, scripts of Starsky and Hutch and other things. And I think he wrote the second Paul Newman, Lou Archer movie, where they call it Lou Harper, The Drowning Pool. I think he wrote that.
I think it's amazing that Alvin Sargent wrote this and Spider-Man 2 and 3.
Maybe Sam Raimi was a big Extreme Time fan.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you look at his filmography and there's the, you know, Paper Moon and Bobby Deerfield and Ordinary People.
There's a film right there, Bobby Deerfield, the Pacino one, which is just buried, which no one remembers.
Yeah, that's one of the Pacino movies nobody talks about anymore.
No.
Sidney Pollack.
Only hardcore Pacino fans will mention that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I remember on the old Ben Stiller show, he was doing like a Al Pacino sketch, and Bobby Deerfield was one of the punchlines. Like, I even like Bobby Deerfield. So I guess it just has that rep.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of those films that those guys made that, you know, were just, they're there, but no one talked about, like 1900.
Oh, yeah.
I liked it, but my goodness, it's 5 and a bit hours to get through of that.
Yeah.
It's the full cut. It's just, ugh.
It takes about 1900 hours to watch it. You know?
Oh, yeah. That's what it feels like. Beautifully shot. But
it does have Donald Sutherland headbutting a cat. You know,
it does, and also has Burt Lancaster filling up a young girl in a barn, which is very, you know,
Burt Lancaster probably lobbied very hard for that role. You know, like in The Swimmer, he's like, I just want to be in these tight swim trunks the whole time, and I'm gonna creep on young girls and stuff.
Did anybody ever see these Spitting Image American TV specials where they had puppets for De Niro, Pacino, and Dustin Hoffman, and they're doing everything together, but they can't tell each other apart? Yeah. but they're going, no, he's De Niro, I'm Pacino, no, I'm Hoffman, no, I'm Pacino. It's just back and forth.
That was a cutting edge show, Spitting Image, for its time.
Yeah,
I remember the British. It was an American show or a British show first?
It was British, but they did these two American network television specials that when I saw them back then, I thought they were far funnier than the British material, because apparently there was a lot about American culture they could spoof and
I remember that,
get some pretty big laughs out of it.
They did the Ronald Reagan parody song, you know, the Do Run Ron. Yeah, they had one, the Do Run Ron, you know, for the election. But, yeah.
Right. But they had one like spoofing the Oscars, which was brilliant. I'd love to see them again. I used to have tape recordings that are long gone, but yeah, they were pretty funny, but it had Pacino, De Niro, and Hoffman puppets who were like jogging together. And then Andrew Dice Clay even did that joke where all three of them are going to the zoo and he's doing impressions of all three of them. He does it on the Dice Rules movie, the one that got the X rating.
Yeah. Back when Dice was funny.
Yeah. Back when he was hilarious.
Yeah.
Before he was destroyed by the feminist movement.
It took them a while to get to him, but yeah, I finally got to him.
He was the biggest comic in the world.
I got a woman opening for me. What do you want?
What do you want?
I could not work out how Dice Clay became the biggest comedian. I mean, he was okay, but it was just not. The thing is, I don't think you'll ever see a comedian get that big again.
No.
Not in the modern era. Dave Chappelle is probably the closest we're going to get.
You know, man, there was like half a year where Dane Cook was huge.
Yeah.
Remember that? Like, he was massive for a minute.
He's your generation. Right?
He was big when I was in college, you know.
Right, right. He was a big deal. Like, I remember he hosted SNL, and I'd never heard of him. Like, I was totally, just completely alien to me.
He had a very big flash in the pan, but you listen to his stand up and you go, like, these aren't even jokes. Like, you know, like this is.
No, I think wasn't he like a MySpace comedian in a way?
Maybe. Yeah. He might have.
Friendster, maybe even Friendster. I don't know.
It was after Friendster, because I remember MySpace was still big when I was in college.
Right. I think he was a MySpace guy.
Who's the comedian? I'm just sorry if I'm looking down. I'm trying to look up his name. It's on my Spotify. Berg. What's his first name?
Alan Berg, the radio show host that
shot.
John loves. Who got
it was
shot.
Hilarious.
Aaron Berg. Yeah.
Aaron Berg. Oh, yeah. The Canadian. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard one of his albums really good, actually.
He's very, very funny. He's hysterical. He's always putting out funny tweets. He's putting out funny videos, doing In the Hot Water every day on Compound Media. Yeah,
oh, that's his show. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a documentary about him on Amazon Prime where he does something like a record breaking number of stand up gigs in one night in New York. And he's running from club to club trying to do all these gigs.
He's doing the Orson Welles thing where he gets an ambulance to take him.
Yeah. I'm surprised he didn't do it, but it was like, and maybe he did, and I forgot, but he did something like 20 performances or something in one night in New York.
Orson Welles is because he was just overweight. That's why he got an ambulance. Nothing.
Well, this was back when he was like young, handsome Orson Welles.
Yeah, he was somewhat normal weight.
Yeah. Not the overweight Nashua.
No, this was when he was doing like The Shadow and War of the Worlds and stuff like that.
God, he was great as The Shadows. Oh my God.
But yeah, John, what are some thoughts you had on Straight Time? Did you enjoy it?
I liked it. I thought the first hour was great. Once it gets to the final robbery that really, you know, does him in, without giving too much away, I thought it started to hit that kind of cliched 1950s crime thriller structure. Like, I was a little surprised to see it hit to that. But there's still some good stuff in there. Like, I think it has the first chase scene through the neighborhoods that you later saw imitated by Point Break and countless other LA or California set cop thrillers.
Yeah, I was going, that feels fair, pretty modern.
Yeah, yeah. That, I think that's the first time that was done. Now, this means I could probably watch some Elliot Gould movie next week and realize, oh, no, wait, it was done here in 74. But this, I think, is the earliest example of that, where the cameras are probably handheld and follow him through the backyards and through the side of the homes and everything. It's very innovative for the time.
You talk about guys who got big. How the hell did Elliot Gould get big? I can't work that out.
It's a mystery. It's something Dice even did a routine for, and he did. He claims he did not know Elliot Gould was in the crowd. And he was doing this whole thing about Elliot Gould, and then they cut to Elliot Gould in the audience. And then in an interview, he's like, I didn't know he was there. I didn't mean to. It's very cruel.
Elliot, suck my dick.
Hey, he was like, Elliot Gould. What is Barbara Streisand doing with an Elliot Gould?
Yeah, he was married. You know, that might be the mystery of his career, is Barbara Streisand and... Robert Altman really liked him.
Barbara Streisand is a mystery. She's a very unattractive lady. I'm sorry.
But you know, like, Altman just really liked Gould and put him in all kinds of movies.
I saw one, Modern Problems, I think it was. And I was just like, oh, God.
I like The Long Goodbye. That's a fun one.
Yeah, Long Goodbye is good. I like that.
Like, sitting around mumbling to himself about his cat. I need to find this cat.
He's just mumbling through the whole movie.
Yeah. Find this cat food.
Keep Elliot Gould, I'll take Eric Bogosian any day.
Eric Bogosian's in Uncut Gems, Stu.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh.
Might have to watch it now.
He's also Armenian, like our friend Garrett.
Yes, he is.
Well, his last name's ending in I-A-N. Yeah. I would never dream.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's... Nobody could have possibly predicted this.
He's one of the only ones. Him, Adrian Barbeau, Garo. That's it.
Kim Kardashian as well. Don't forget her.
Yeah, that's right. Kardashians.
The Elliot Gould movie, that the title alone is like, what is going on? He did a movie with Cannon called, hold on, I got to find the picture of this film. I mean, the name of this film.
Who is Harry Kellerman?
No.
No, not that one.
It's called the title. Oh my gosh, where is it? I'm looking for it on IMDb. It's a movie. I think Menachem Golan directed it.
Oh boy,
Chinese. Isn't it like a fake? It's like a fake Woody Allen movie, right?
Yeah, it is. And the documentary on one of the Canon documentaries, Elliot Gould. He goes, I called Menachem a cocksucker, and he got really mad. And I went, I'm just kidding. He goes, I'm just kidding, Menachem. You're not a cocksucker. Can we do the scene now? I can't remember if it was Electric Boogaloo or the Go-Go Boys that he said that, but I can't find the name of this movie, but I'm sure that it's under a different title. I'll figure it out. Yeah. But I don't know. Elliot Gould, he's good in some things, you know. He has some okay movies.
Ocean's 11.
He did the first version of ER as a sitcom.
He did.
Yeah, there was an early version of ER before the Michael Crichton TV version that was based on the Chicago play with Elliot Gould in the lead, and it was on CBS for like half a season or something. Mm. It's like 83, 84, something like that.
And then Anthony Edwards got big from Revenge of the Nerds and said, nope, I'm going to ER. Don't you ever mention Revenge of the Nerds to me ever again.
Right, well, then they brought it back. They tried ER again in the 90s, Michael Crichton developed version, and that was done as a straight drama with some comedy, and that worked better. But this was like a sitcom with like a laugh track and everything.
Yeah. You know what? Speaking of Revenge of the Nerds, I got my new glasses in, by the way, my nerds glasses. Ones are gone. They're rooted.
You put together some model airplanes?
No! If you watch Anthony Edwards in Revenge of the Nerds 2, that is the most uncomfortable you have ever seen an actor in a film who's basically screaming, get me out of here.
He did it for contract reasons, right?
He had to, yeah. He's contractually obligated to do it. Otherwise, he said, no way. He will no longer do any reunions with the things, any cons about that. And if you look at the Blu-ray of Revenge of the Nerds, there's only Robert Carradine on the cover. On the old VHS, used to be him and Anthony Edwards, because Anthony Edwards said, nah, you can't use my image no more. I don't know what it is his problem with that film, but he doesn't want nothing to do with it.
Okay, I found the movie I was thinking of.
Mm.
Okay.
It's called Over the Brooklyn Bridge. But but the working title was My Darling Shiksa.
Jeez.
And it's about like Elliot Gould plays a guy who's trying to get a loan from his uncle, but only if he'll only give it to him if he leaves his Shiksa girlfriend. That's what it says.
That's really going to draw the crowds in Iowa. I don't know why films didn't succeed. Wow.
Oh, yeah. It's got Caesar. It's got Burt Young, Carol Kane. Oh, God,
Burt Young.
He's Sarah Michelle Gellar is young in it.
Oh, my God.
But just, I remember they called it by its working title in the documentary on Canon Films. And I was going, that's a heck of a title right there. Kind of head turning. I'm like, what?
Strange. Yeah. Anyway, we want to rate this thing or what?
Yeah, let's rate it. Stuart, this movie's of one you're a big fan of. What would you give it out of 10?
I'm going to give it an 8. I really enjoy it. Yeah, it does, as John mentioned, just drags a little towards the end. Where I was, you know, a bit of clock watching, you know, hitting the display. Okay, 20 minutes to go. All right, 10 minutes to go. But overall, solid, solid movie. And well worth your time. You know, if you're going to keep looking, if you're going to look at Dustin Hoffman films, push all the ones that you've seen aside numerous times to the side and watch this one.
Yeah.
It's on streaming, right? You said to rent or
I rented it on Amazon. It was $1.99. I could watch it in HD, which was worth it.
It's worth $2 as a rental. Yeah. Or pick up the Blu-ray, sure. Which is out and about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Blu-ray looks fantastic. I have the Warner Archive Blu-ray, and it's
Your one comes with the 20 something minute mini feature on there as well by Eddie Bunker and the making of.
I got to say, it says, okay, that's one thing. I don't know if I'm stupid or what, but it says that on the case, and I couldn't find it on the disc.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so buyer beware there.
Oh, boy, okay.
I'm going to have to look into that. Because I was going to watch it, and then I couldn't find it, and I was going...
Right, okay. Yeah, it should be under the menu of... It should be the commentary selection... The mini feature and then the theatrical trailer. It's also on my DVD.
I opened extras. It just had commentary trailer.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
So it must be something contractual. I couldn't get it on there.
But it's on the. It's advertised on the case. So just beware. But it does have the commentary.
Yeah. But the 22-minute feature or mini piece is really good because it's actually shot in 77.
Yeah.
And they're making a film and talking to Eddie Bunker and he's, you know, disgusting dyed black hair, and it's a real interesting piece, but I don't know. I have a further search on there.
If you got the DVD, you know, and you want to get the Blu-ray, I wouldn't sell it if you really like that feature. So
yeah, it's on there, but it's got to be, it's only brand new, so it's got to be a manufacturing problem they've done over at the archives. It's not the first time they've done something wrong.
Maybe. I've got to look into Blu-ray.com and see if the answers are probably
there. That is the sloppiest Blu-ray company in existence right now. It's
Warner really Archives. Worse than Shout Factory?
Warner Home Video is actually worse. Yeah. Mm. Well, putting out the Golden Harvest stuff, no English dub, and with subtitles for the deaf, with sound effect subtitles.
Terrible.
I mean, how inept can you get?
That's terrible.
It's ridiculous.
That reminds me of when Ghost in the Shell came out. Ghost in the Shell 2 came out on DVD, and it had only the subtitles for the deaf and hard of hearing that I think were from the dub, you know, like with the Japanese track. It's just terrible. Subsequent releases fixed that, but boy, like I remember fans were pissed when that came out.
Jeez.
Just for the record, John, as well, there's a new re-release of Fist of Fury on Blu-ray coming over here. So
what's this with that? Is it the missing trailer that's been MIA for years? The extra Bruce Lee, Robert Baker?
I don't know. It's called it's their Films of Fury line that they're doing, and they're releasing Fist of Fury.
Balls of Fury?
No, not that one. Not that one. But I think, is it Fist of Fury or the Big Boss are doing first? I can't remember. It's one of them. But yeah, if you want to add to that ever-growing Bruce Lee collection.
Only if it has the saw in the head scene. That's the only thing it's going to get me there.
Was that in Fist of Fury or Big Boss?
It's in Big Boss.
Big Boss. Okay, I'll check which one it is.
You know. Yeah. Fist of Fury has that missing trailer that where Robert Baker and Bruce Lee shot a scene for the trailer, shot a fight scene for the trailer. So it's now lost. It's like,
so if that's on this release, will you buy it?
Yeah, I probably will. Like
And then when you buy it, you'll give us an update of how many times you bought the Bruce Lee films, right?
Yeah, I'll actually have to count, and then I'll have to count every medium I've purchased it in, which is like VHS, Laserdisc. Jeez, did I buy the VCDs? I hope I didn't. It just goes on.
And more importantly, how many acres of lawn have you mowed over the years to get these tapes?
Well, I was working real jobs by the time I was buying these things. So, you know. Okay. And then with VHS, it's like, okay, well, then you got to get the Japanese version because it looks nicer. It's in widescreen because remember, we were stuck pan and scan, but the Japanese were doing everything in letterbox. So,
Take a poll. It's like a broad number, say 40 to 50 times he's bought this or
is it? I don't even want to think about it. It's at least a dozen. I hate to say it.
Dozen? Is that all?
I don't even like those films that much. That's what's so funny.
I was
thinking like three figures who bought these films.
Well, it's like they're almost like these essentials. Like if you have a library, you got to have some Shakespeare there and some William Faulkner.
Yeah.
So the Bruce Lees are kind of like the Shakespeare, William Faulkner of your collection.
It's like, if you're a martial arts movie fan and you don't own those, people think you're a fan and you don't have these Bruce Lee.
Yeah, you're faking the funk, man. You're just like, you know.
So John, what would you give Straight Time?
Well, my general opinion is first hour is great. Does hit cliche land, like especially when Gary Busey screws him over. He's a little too preoccupied in his jewelry store robbery and everything, not to give too much away. But and Teresa Russell, I thought I've never been impressed with her as an actress. Although she looks good in this, mm-hmm. She has some good scenes. It's probably her best performance that I've seen, and we're talking about a career of a lot of bad performances. But she's good here, decent, I suppose. Other than some problems in the second half, I think it's a pretty damn good movie, and a lot of the reality and the way that Hoffman comes off as an ex-con, like he's a wiry little tough guy, which is not something he probably got to play too often. Mm-hmm. Usually he plays wimps or, you know, like Marathon Man, a much tortured marathon runner. It's just, he comes off great. Like when he just snaps in certain violent scenes, it's terrific. And
it's believable.
The comedy is not forced. It's very natural. It's very slice of life when stuff happens that you kind of laugh at. It's
The comedy is every time Gary Busey opens his mouth.
And Emmett Walsh, and like when he does the robbery with the crappy little Saturday Night Special, the bullet falls out.
Oh yeah.
but it's got a lot of really compelling stuff. It's obviously was an influence on Reservoir Dogs. I think that's why Tarantino actually hired Eddie Bunker to be in the film. Mm-hmm. And it's got a good naturalistic feel, and it's an adult movie, which how often do we get to see that these days? And it's not for children, and good. And there's a lot. It is really like maybe one of the more underrated 70s films, without a doubt. Yeah, I'd rather watch this again than some of the stuff we put too much praise on, like Mean Streets.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. This is better than Mean Streets.
Right.
So what would you give it out of 10, did you say?
I would give it, I'd give it an 8. Easy.
Yeah.
It's solid. I think it's one of the essential crime movies of the 70s. I think this and Friends of Eddie Coyle, and this is actually more entertaining than Friends of Eddie Coyle.
Yeah, I'd give
the
this
other one as well. The other one as well, sorry, Hunter, is Charlie Varick.
Yeah, Charlie Varick's really good. But it's a caper film. It's not believable, you know, but it's a really strong caper film. I do like it quite a bit.
Well, I would give it a 9, but you know, I wasn't as bothered by the bagginess towards the sort of
the cliches, the tropes, Hunter.
Yeah, I mean, I like that stuff, so I don't really care. Yeah. But yeah, I would say it's an essential Hoffman movie. Like if you're if you've never seen it and you like him, go watch it. It's great. I don't have much to add off what hasn't been said already. So yeah,
I do. I got one more piece that I forgot to mention.
When
I was watching this film, I said they should have renamed this film Lung Cancer Time because the amount of smoking in this film is ridiculous.
Yeah, constant smoking. Goodness.
Yeah.
Lung Cancer Time.
Yeah. It was the 70s.
Yay. All right. Well, do we have anything to plug before we go?
No. No, I don't. Oh, I got the Joseph Quo box set ordered and it's on its way.
Oh, nice. I need to get that.
Yeah. I thought you would have got the Darkness album by now.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got it.
Where the fuck are you showing on the junk bit?
Well, because I just have it digitally right now. I don't have the
vinyl. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Oh, I thought you bought the vinyl of it.
No, I haven't got the vinyl yet. I will, though, whenever I can find, whenever I see it, you know, at the store.
Yeah.
Sometimes the vinyl takes a while to come out because, you know, those plants are so backed up. So
that's the global transport conundrum at the moment.
That too.
It doesn't help.
No. All right, guys. Well, anything to add before we go? No. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
Yeah, peace out.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.